Well, let's get this party started. All right, this is the Publishers Weekly panel. It's an annual panel that Publishers Weekly, the trade magazine of the book publishing industry, does on comics. We do one every year. This one's selling comics to a diverse audience. My name is Calvin Reed. I'm senior news editor at Publishers Weekly and co-editor of PW Comics World, which is our online coverage of comics and graphic novel publishing. Thank you. Nah. There you go. if I did not record this,
you would have to steal
James. My colleague would string me up. Anyway, so yeah, we'll put another. In addition to being a senior news editor, I'm the co-host of More to Come, which is a weekly podcast on comics and graphic novel publishing that I do with my colleague Heidi McDonald. You may have heard her. She's also the editor-in-chief of The Beat. And with our podcast producer, Kate Fitzsimmons. So check it out. It's free, and you can get it on iTunes. But what we're going to talk about today, selling comics to a diverse audience. And I'm going to set the scene for this just as I usually do when I moderate panels, by talking about a little bit about myself. All right, I grew up at a time when, in the 60s, where everyone was straight and white. Or so we were told.
What?
You're not?
You know what? Of course, that wasn't really true, but you couldn't tell it by looking at the comics. We're in a whole new world now. One of the more exciting things about our medium right now is the new readers that are coming into it. What we're going to do today is talk with four retailers, one former retailer, but really very close, still very close to the whole deal, about how they deal with this, how they are attracting new readers, what's the nature of diversity, this word that we use and throw about. And I'm going to introduce the panel now, and very briefly, but I'm going to give them a chance to talk about themselves as well as their stores and how they're dealing with the new world of comics retailing. And by that, the new world of comics publishing and comics creators and new storytellers that we see like exploding around us. And as I put it, this is we live in a world now beyond the one genre, one format, one kind of fan comics marketplace that typified really my growing up into comics nerddom. All right. So to my left, Chris Butcher, former manager of The Beguiling, but very recently so. Yeah. And he's doing other things. I'm going to let him talk about that and The Beguiling, a fabulous store in Toronto. Chris does a lot of things, but I'm going to let him talk about that. Next to him, Terrence Irvins. You, the graphic novel buyer at Kinokuniya in New York City. Another awesome store, I tell you. You like manga, you like Western graphic novels. Yeah. You like stuff. Go to the second floor, Kinokuniya, Bryant Park, New York City. He's got what you need.
Yeah.
All right. Next to him, who I've had the pleasure to meet, Jennifer Haynes, owner of The Dragon in Guelph, Ontario. Did I get that right? Yes. Awesome. And next to her, Kristen Perez from Santa Monica, and Heidi Ho.
Yes, Heidi Ho Comics.
Heidi Ho Comics. So that's the brief introduction. Now, what I'm going to do, and we're going to go in the opposite direction that I went. I'm going to get this started by asking each of you, going down the line, to describe your store and your own entry into the retailing business. And I want you to define what this panel's theme means for you. What does the diversity mean when you hear it and when you think about it and when you strategize around it for your store? So we're going to start with you, Kristen.
Okay. I'm Kristen. I am co-owner of Heidi Ho Comics in Santa Monica, California. Heidi Ho Comics is the oldest and longest still running comic book shop in Los Angeles County. We're celebrating our 40th anniversary this month, actually. It was 7/7/77 that Heidi Ho opened their doors. My husband and I are co-owners of Heidi Ho Comics with two other couples, but he and I do the day-to-day ins and outs managing of the shop. How did I come into retailing? So before being before coming into the comic book retail business, I actually had a professional career in the nonprofit sector. I worked with gang-involved girls involved in the juvenile justice system for about 10 years. And during that time, I was able to interact with very diverse communities. The girls themselves came from all over Los Angeles County. And so turned out I needed a break. Turns out that's like some really tough stuff. And so during that time, my husband came across the opportunity to purchase Heidi Ho and asked me if I wanted to come and help out. And I was not a big comic book reader. Walking Dead was my gateway comic when it first started. I wasn't a comic reader, but I was a huge reader of prose books. So it turns out that the transition to reading comics was not that big of a change, and I absolutely loved all the stories that I was being introduced to. But once I started working at Heidi Ho, I had to know what I was selling, I had to know what I was talking about, so I just started reading everything that came out new every week and just tried to stay on top of it. My passion has always been gender-specific work in my nonprofit sector, and I really tried to meld the two when I came to Heidi Ho, really wanting to provide access to marginalized groups and communities through comic book reading. I really wanted to focus on using my experience in those communities to make sure that those communities had access to comic books and felt comfortable when they came into my shop. So really that's what, to answer the second question, diversity means to me at Heidi Ho Comics, is really being able to offer content in the books that I carry in my shops that mirror the diverse people that are walking in. And Santa Monica is very diverse. Santa Monica is very liberal. So I think compared to maybe some other LCSs throughout the country, we have that advantage. But I think that, to me, being able to have those books on hand to show people who come in that, hey, I can show them themselves in the books that I'm carrying in the shop.
Great.
So my name's Jen Haynes, and I own The Dragon in Guelph, Ontario. We'll be celebrating 19 years this coming September. I came to retail from a fan perspective. So I was working at an established store in close to Guelph. And I was going to university in Guelph, and the store that was in Guelph at the time just wasn't the kind of store I wanted to go to. I realize now that the store I first started shopping in was actually an anomaly in that they treated me like, you know, a customer the moment I walked in, and it was very like laid out very well and very bright and organized, and that really informed what I wanted to do with stores. And, you know, even to this day, when I go into comic stores, 9 times out of 10, I'm totally ignored. Yep. And so my goal has always been to create that place where everybody who walks through the door is a customer, whether they fit the traditional demographic of a comic or game store. So I opened the store with that in mind. I decided Guelph needed a better store than they had, so I was going to do it. I was going to do that store. It kind of took over my life. At first I was like, if this doesn't work out in 5 years, I'm good. But you know, it really became like a passion project to see it grow and develop. But it's always been based in that idea that I wanted a place where families felt comfortable coming. And you know, now probably almost half of our customer base is families, and you know, it's part of a special outings for them or part of just their gift buying circuit for birthday parties and whatnot. So it's been really important to me throughout the history of the store that, you know, the store be set up in a way that normalizes the shopping experience. It's set up in a way that, you know, you could walk into sort of, you would get the same experience walking into like a Barnes & Noble as walking into the Dragon. You know, things are clear and they're laid out and they're labeled and the staff have name tags so you feel like a connection to them because you know their name. And there's all these, you know, we've arranged things by genre because that's how people shop as opposed to by publisher. We do all sorts of things to make sure that we are a normal experience so that everybody feels comfortable coming in and they aren't feeling scrutinized or out of place or feeling like they don't know if this is the right store for them. We get so many people coming in who don't even know we're a comic store right away. They walk in and then they're like, oh, wait a second. What kind of store is this? And I've had people recently ask me if we are a franchise because we carry ourselves like we're part of a larger organization, a larger chain. And that's really heartening to me because I know like that's making good steps forward. For me, diversity is about constantly paying attention to that, constantly making sure that in everything that I do, in all the training of my staff, in all the ways that I set up my store, that every single person who comes in is made to feel like they belong and is made to feel like the best customer, whether it's their first time or their 40th time through the door. We recently started our New Wave section, which is fantastic, which kind of addresses the in-between. It's basically a YA section, but we were really seeing a whole selection of books that were appealing to a very specific market, so late teens, early 20s to mid-20s women who were really into things like Giant Days and Motor Crush and Lumberjanes, and so we created a section of books that's specifically for them, and it's been amazing, and so it's really, you know, giving people a place that they feel that their needs are understood and met when they come into the store.
You know, if I just jump in for a second, I don't know if I've made clear, you know, that most of you are comic shop stores, you're direct market stores, and there is a difference. And of course, Terrence works at a general trade bookstore, but you've done both. So I just wanted to set the stage, probably unnecessarily for you.
Keep drawing attention to me. I am Terrence. I used to be an alcoholic. No, I'm playing. I got into retail by accident. I started when I was a kid to draw, and I wanted to be an illustrator, and I even went to college to become an illustrator. But my life has been insurmountably, inextricably tied to comics and retail because as a kid, I used to steal my comics. Then after that, I used to hang out in bookstores whenever I cut school, instead of hanging out in Times Square. Where am I getting at with all this? When I got into college, I worked at Barnes & Noble, and then I rose to the ranks to become part of the senior sales staff, and worked in other forms of retail right before working at Midtown Comics in New York City. And so I was hired at Midtown Comics to bring my expertise and know-how from Barnes & Noble to bring that type of sense of doing things to a direct market type of shop. What I brought to them was more of a customer service type of appeal, not trying to change any displays or anything like that, but getting people to be more open-minded, think more broadly about who they're dealing with as far as customers, not trying to stigmatize anyone who doesn't seem like your typical comic book person. From there, I was hired onto Kinokuniya Books, to where we decided to expand our selection of comics and graphic novels and bring the comic shop side into the bookstore. So I was asked to do the reverse, which I thought was a dumb idea. But it ended up being a very fascinating experience for me for the last 5 years. And what I've learned is that this market needs to be approached in a more book market sense while still catering to those who have a specific idea of what they're looking for. So you want to be there for everyone. You want to show that same type of enthusiasm for everyone. And meanwhile, not putting everybody in a niche box of what they should be expecting for comic books. And I think that's the biggest thing that we're looking at right now. We're hitting a new golden age right now. A lot of people don't realize this. This is a new golden age where you have a lot of genres and books and ideas being explored that is outside the realm of what is expected to be of comic books. And it's more global now. And you have people from so many parts of the world who have an expectation of superheroes, And then you have so many people from this part of the world who have an expectation of beyond superheroes. And I think everybody can get that same type of love under the sun. And so, you know, I don't have a real fascinating story, but, you know, because I'm jealous of you all for that. But, you know, it's, I do a simple job. And my simple job is basically to bring things that I find of interest in a very curatorial sense to people who actually might have an interest towards comics that they didn't even know they ever thought. It's kind of like bringing them out of the closet when they didn't know they were in the closet, you know? And that's what I do. Because, you know, Calvin drew too much attention to
me. You're on a panel. That's what it's about.
You're at the front. My name is Christopher Butcher, and until last month I was the manager at the Beguiling Books and Art in Toronto. I have been a comic book retailer in a direct market stores for 24 years. Ever since I was a wee teenager, and I worked in all kinds of stores, like little like strip mall stores, big mall stores, kiosks and things like that, to destination stores like the Big Island, where you don't even know it's there, even if you walk by it half the time, which is kind of great too. For me, diversity means seeing yourself in your reading material. Now, I didn't really see a lot of that growing up. Like, you can project yourself on the Transformers or X-Men. They're all metaphors, you know. But you don't necessarily... They're still not living your life. And for me, it was... I was really loyal to my local comic shop, which was like a 20-minute drive away, to the point where there was the guy at the comic book shop, you know, 10 minutes down the road, was offering me a job, and I was like, no, man, I shop at a different store. Like, no, you could work at this one. And I still shopped at the other one for the first few months I worked there, even with the discount, because people are loyal to their comic book store. And right around that time was when I saw The Invisibles, and I saw, like, actual out queer characters for the first time. And I could see myself reflected in the pages of a comic book. It was crazy, and I'd never had that in my whole life before. And it was really big. It was a really big deal for me, and it helped me, you know, eventually come out. The Beguiling is a unique store. It was one of the three stores that was awarded the very first ever Eisner Spirit of Retailing Award, the first year that they offered it. And it's because the Beguiling, since the beginning, has been committed to carrying literally everything. Every book that's in print, and then hunting down stuff that isn't in print to give the widest possible viewpoint, most diverse possible viewpoint, I guess since that's the language we're using today, of the industry. And the idea was antithetical to curation in a lot of ways. It was about just like, put everything out there. Mm. Don't make anyone who comes in the door feel special or necessarily even welcome. But create this space where if they want to, they can find their own space.
Yeah.
And it's really antithetical to contemporary retail. And the store is still like that to a degree, although they're changing a little bit. Circumstances being, they've moved to a smaller store now. But the idea there was like, we're going to just carry everything and we're going to let people find their own space. And it's not for everyone, for sure, but it did mean that people could enter the industry, enter the medium of comics, without those preconceived notions. We did a little bit of curating, where the first floor, where you walk into the store, is art comics, but also art books and literature, and we used to carry all the Beats novels and things like that. And then the superheroes and the stuff from the more initiated fan, people that wanted to dig a little deeper, was upstairs. And I always thought that was a really great way to lay things out. Because you could enter the store and encounter graphic novels. You could encounter graphic novels before graphic novels was a term. I mean, we've known each other forever. You could encounter graphic novels before stores carried graphic novels. And that was a big deal. And then if you were, like, what else? So, like, you'd come to the store for, like, a year or two and then go, wait, what's upstairs? You just never go up and see what the rest of the store had to offer. It's like, well, go upstairs. They'll show you around. And it would be the manga, and it would be the superheroes, and it'd be the sci-fi. It'd be all that kind of stuff that has become the mainstream today. So it's been a really weird, long retail road. I've been writing about comics the whole time as well and trying to direct people to what I thought the good stuff was. And then just recently I took a consulting editor job, literally last month, at Viz Media, where now my job is to make sure that we're only publishing comics that people want to stock at Kinokuniya and at their comic book stores. Because, you know, there's... I think a lot of people want to publish a lot of different kind of stuff, but I want to make sure that the quality is still there, too. I think people deserve good comics in addition to comics that reflect their lives. And I got really lucky when I was young that I found a comic that spoke to me, and I'm glad it was of quality. I want to make sure that we're putting good stuff out there, too.
And let me just... Congrats to you, Chris.
Oh, thank you.
I'm really happy that you got this new gig in life, and I'm really happy there for you.
Thanks.
I just wanted to say that myself.
Thank you. I appreciate that, man.
Well, if you're not familiar, I mean, Chris Butcher has been doing amazing things in so many different areas of comics. We want to have him talk about TCAP and all the rest.
Oh, I forgot about TCAP.
Yeah, man.
One of the most awesome comic shows.
I founded a comic festival.
Yeah.
15 years old next year.
In his spare time.
Yeah, 15, man. That's why we love Chris.
All right.
We can do a panel on Chris,
right,
but we won't.
Right.
Okay. So, I mean, you've all touched on some of the stuff. I've got a bunch of questions. I mean, when we talk about what's going on in the retailing market today, I mean, everything is changing, particularly in terms of comics. This is really going to be directed at the direct market authors. Is the material available for these new audiences? I mean, and there's another question. I don't mean to make this too complicated, but I just think is the material available? And where do you see the demand coming from in your community? So, if that makes sense. So we'll jump back.
I thought we were going to go this way.
We've touched on some of this stuff, but let's see if we can elaborate a little bit more. Is the material available in the direct market, too? That's a particularly contentious...
I mean, we've all kind of talked about how we are seeing the industry changing, and the big two definitely have a lot of changes that have been going on, but a lot of the indie... publishing companies is a lot of where we find our diversity and what we stock. My answer is kind of like a yes and no, because Boom, Dark Horse, Vertigo, all those publishers have books that highlight diverse characters, lots of stuff that's good that's being out there. But you also have publishers like Emmett Comics, who is recently a new publishing company, started in 2015. Their main focus is bringing diverse creators together, specifically to empower girls and women through storytelling, through comic storytelling. You have things like Prism Comics, who it's a hub for all of the LGBTQ creators and writers, and places where they can go and network and have a place to work out their stories, and they also have a website that offers these books. Stranger Comics, a small publishing company who's mostly highlights Black protagonists in their stories. Those last three ones that I just mentioned, for the most part, are not available through Diamond Comics, which is how direct retailers get their comic books.
Stranger.
Some of them are, Some of them are. Very small print runs, for sure.
Right,
though.
Yeah.
So, as a retailer, you have to do your research. You have to do your research of what's out there, because the things that come in your previews book every single month is not the end all, the be all. There's so much more out there. Go to your local conventions. The Artist Alley is full of creators that have compelling stories to tell. It's definitely out there, but as retailers, sometimes you really just have to do your work to find it.
Just to add to that, too, I mean, even the previews catalog, when it does have good stuff, you get one kick at the can.
Yeah.
Diamond isn't stocking a lot of diverse material, isn't stocking a lot of stuff for kids. Like, I'm going to just say this once, because I could just do this with the whole panel. Diamond can't be the end-all and be-all for comic book stores anymore. They either need to step up their game, or retailers need to go around them. And that's something that we learned, like, 20 years ago, and everyone else is starting to realize, like, why can't I get a reorder on Real Friends? Like, Real Friends is the number four best-selling book in, like, indie bookstores right now, and Diamond isn't going to take an inventory position on it. Like, there are real problems with how they're doing business. And, like, you know what? We've got the tools. We can set up accounts with Scholastic. We can set up accounts with Macmillan. We can set up accounts with Ingram if it comes to that. That's where diversity is going to come from, is a diversity of ordering sources, I think.
On every level.
Yeah, you two both covered anything that I was going to say on that.
Sorry.
Definitely, but you know, I do want people to talk about their stores, too.
Okay.
So
We've always had graphic novels. We've always tried to accommodate different levels of fans. That's always been part of our mandate, is this idea that every level of fan is welcome and helped at the Dragon. With more so, I would say, the casual fan. We don't have the skills or the inventory to cater to the very hardcore comic fan who's looking for very rare key issues, that sort of thing. Our focus is way more on the families and, you know, the people who are getting into comics for the first time. Like, we love those people. That's fantastic. I had a woman come in the other day, and she was buying comics for her brother, and I was like, well, what about you? Do you read comics? She's like, oh, no, they're not for me. And I was like, well, what have you read? She's like, oh, he tried to get me to read, you know, this Wolverine comic, these X-Men, and I was like, well, what about non-superhero stuff? And she said, there's non-superhero comics? I was flabbergasted.
It's so wounding to hear this.
I know. Yeah, I was like, no, here, take this issue of Saga home and read it, and then come back and talk to me. And she came back a few days later, and she's like, I'm so embarrassed. I don't understand how to read these. So I went through how to follow the panel transitions and everything. She ended up buying Seekers into the Mystery.
Yeah.
Which is like, that's not a light entry into the comic. And she is like, she came back a couple weeks later, she's like, you were right. I just came in to tell you, you were right. I love comics, and I will be back. And so, like, those moments are the key moments for me. You know, really being able to connect people with comics that, for the first time, or for the 40th time, but having so much diversity, like, even my hardcore, like, superhero customers will pick up Comic of the Week, because we never put a superhero book as Comic of the Week. It's always something else that we're interested in. You know, our staff have such a wide range of interests in comics that we want to make sure that people know how many different things they can be reading out there, how many different books there are. I feel like I've meandered, and I'm not sure where I was going.
No, it was good.
No, not at all. I mean, I think, Chris, and I'm going to get to Terrence in just a second, too, but I think I want people to know about Terrence. I Chris brought up a really interesting, it's one of the questions I have on this. I mean, part of what I'm curious about is how have books impacted these direct market stores? And you're saying, as you were saying, Chris, the distribution. We live in a new era. Stores need to go beyond the diamond connection, I guess.
Yes.
I really think that things like the We Need Diverse Books movement are really important.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But coming at that market from the direct market comic side of things, it's like, it's paradise as far as we're concerned. Like, the breadth and diversity and stock levels and, like, even the terms where we can try stuff out and return it if it doesn't work is remarkable. Is a remarkable thing. So,
that's the dream.
That is the dream. It's like, what if we just tried to do everything that's in print from a publisher, because we've never really carried that publisher before. If it doesn't work, we'll return, like, nice copies of it. But if it does work, that's great. Now we've got a whole new product line. That's not something that working with a direct market affords us.
And can I just say, I don't know whether, I mean, I always like to make sure that people understand the distinction between how the direct market stocks itself and how the general bookstore trade, because very often people don't know. So, would one of you guys care? I mean, general?
Well, okay.
Terrence can talk about it.
No, because I think there's a misleading to that, because that's, bookstores are still bookstores, even if you're selling periodicals. That's number one.
Sure.
So the options are there for you if you're aware of the options. The problem is, when you go into setting up a direct market shop, you're not automatically aware of those options. And then the other side problem to this whole thing is that you have to have a reasonable credit line to set up a lot of these accounts.
Yeah.
So when you're setting up a direct market shop, you don't already have that in the bank, because when you got a business loan, you were only thinking about setting up a direct comic shop. You weren't trying to compete with a regular bookshop. But you are a regular bookshop.
Yeah.
You know, you just happen to sell periodicals. You are selling magazines. They're just content-driven magazines. Mm. And how I approach it has always been, as Chris mentioned, how can I get as much material that I can return, if possible, so I can promote it properly? Because if I can't order anything that I can't return, then I'm going to do less. That means I'm going to do a disservice to the publisher. So we're the go-between. We're in service of you, the customer, but we're in service of the publisher. Because the more books we can sell, the more readers we can bring in. And the more readers we can bring in, then the more books we can order. So it's a give-and-go situation. But the direct market has tricked itself into thinking that because, look, I have friends at Diamond, so I'm not going to talk too much about it. But
there's a reality.
There's a reality. Yeah, there's a reality. Right. So, but, and I'm not too biased, I'm saying. But at the same time, though.
We're getting disinvited to that party later.
Yeah. It's going to happen. Party at my place. I got a conference room. Seriously. For no reason. But the thing about it is that the options that are there for you when you start up a business are there. So you have to put yourself in that position to become aware of that. Are you opening a comic shop or are you opening a bookstore? And I want people now want to start thinking you're opening a bookstore. You just happen to be selling periodicals. Borders was selling periodicals. Barnes & Noble was selling periodicals. And I'm talking comics floppies, single issues. So how I approach it in my store was, like I said, I was bringing the direct market approach to a bookstore, but yet still thinking about how I can play around with things. I wasn't going to order everything from Diamond unless I knew it was going to sell. I'm going to let the secret out of the bag right here, right now.
Yep.
I have a direct market account for our store. We're no different than anybody else on this dais right here, you know. But we have options, though. We have an account with Baker & Taylor. We have an account with Ingram. We do have an account with everyone under the sun, you know. So it's a question of what are you willing to do to bring in the material to sell to that audience? And that's where I play around, because I want to bring everything in to bring in a diverse audience, because I had to struggle with bringing in people who didn't realize that we were selling graphic novels. You know, we had a small bookcase of graphic novels on our first floor that was right by the bathroom. No one knew what we were doing. What the hell was this? You had like Watchmen and then Peanuts right next to each other. Whose idea was that? I don't know. They're not there anymore. But the thing about it, though, is that when I was tasked to bring in comics to our store, I thought of curating it in the sense of what I liked. And I read too many comics. And I thought to myself, let me bring in everything that I like about comics. And also art books and sketchbooks. So I bring in a lot of stuff from artists, publishers who don't sell directly through distributors.
Yeah, Kinokuniya reaches out to a lot of publishers directly.
Yes, I do. I do everything I can to do that in order to bridge the gap. Because with our store, we have too many people expecting only manga.
Yeah.
But those same people who read manga would also like Giant Days. Mm-hmm. Those same people would also like Awkward. Those same people would like Real Friends and IRL in real life, you know, like there is a market for everyone if they open themselves up to that diverse material. So the question of this whole panel is it about diversity in the sense of ethnicity, gender, and so forth, or is it about diversity about what you're reading?
Yes.
You know, and then
are you above?
Thank you. But I'm not finished yet before you draw more attention to me. This is also about what are you as the audience being diverse about yourselves? You know, do you have an expectation of superheroes that you never read superheroes? There are actually some good superhero books that you need to read.
Yes.
You know, and then there's also books that, for you superhero readers, should be actually opening yourself up to as well. Love and Rockets is still the greatest comic ever written.
All right, now we're getting into the philosophy.
Boricua.
Well, I want to throw a question out all to you. And since we are talking about, the, as I said before, we're talking about diversity of format as well here, because that's going to lead to also even further kinds of diversity. But I'm curious for the direct market stores, do you break down like how much of your business is periodical and how much of it is book-based?
Absolutely, yeah.
And where do you see the interest or the growth or?
So for us, our breakdown is half and half.
Interesting.
And
we're pretty close to that too.
Yeah, we give over a lot of square footage to graphic novels. A lot. Nice. We carry just a very very wide assortment of books. We have a kids section that's its own separate section, and that also includes things that are not graphic novels, like picture books that tie in. So Star Wars or superhero related picture books we'll get in as well. You know, Pokemon handbooks and all sorts of things that just fit into what kids are interested in, because, you know, they're already coming in and they're passionate about it, so why not sell that extra book? That's how I see it. So, yeah, we have about 50-50 between the two. I would say that the graphic novels have been just a constant growth area for us. They're not showing any sign of slowing down. We bring more customers into the industry with the book format than we do with the periodical format, by far. It's just it's a more normalized reading experience, you know? It's more satisfying to read all six issues at once than have to wait between the issues. So we get a lot of new readers who are more interested in that whole book experience as opposed to the single issue experience.
If I can add to that, though, I find it interesting because we started doing single issues for a little bit for the last year and a half. If I had more space to do it, I would actually go balls to the wall crazy about it. But it's not necessary because I agree. You know, a lot of people want to read it in a collective form or in a complete OGN, original graphic novel form. But then when you have the beauty of, like, say, like a series like Monstrous, as soon as they jumped in, they immediately started going to the single issues. So it can work. It depends on the content and how attractive and gravitational that content is for people to get in. It can't work for everyone. It's always worked a lot for superhero comics, but now it's working more for, you know, publishers like Boom and Image, you know, who's done it for years now with titles like Walking Dead. Walking Dead, when I was working at Midtown, people would catch up through the graphic novel to go straight into the actual issues.
Yeah, you get to the end, you're like, what's next? And you're like, well, the next book is out for 4 months.
Right.
Or you can buy these three issues that are right here. Switch formats.
Right. Yeah, especially
and then
those
people just buy them both.
Right. Compendium readers, right?
Exactly.
The end of Compendium 3, and they're like, wait, I have to wait how long?
Yeah.
2 years for another compendium?
And that's when you know, that's when you know you have a problem.
Yeah.
You know, because that's a proper analogy. You going from like doing every 6 months to like every month, and then some people act like they can't even wait another 4 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, imagine how it is like in Japan.
Yeah.
Where you're reading Naruto when it was published every single week. You know.
Wow.
See. So we're the evil empire, we're saying. We're trying to create addiction. But, you know, it's about temperances of addiction. You know, functioning addiction of comics, or is it like you need to show up every week to splash out 100, and I've seen this at a comic shop, and all of y'all seen it, $180 or more for that one Wednesday fix.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Over $3.99, 22-page books. You can buy a $5 book in a manga format for an anthology, and you get about 300 pages worth of stories.
The best thing about floppy comics is that, yeah, it's the Wednesday warrior, it's the Wednesday crowd, you know what I mean? Like, you can't really think of any kind of other industry where someone is incentivized to come back not only every single week, but they're going to be there at least once a month every single month.
Yeah.
And, like, prose novels don't work like that. Nothing in our industry, like magazines maybe, but magazines don't have that same sense of urgency. There's no narrative that continues. So, yeah, like, you'd be kind of foolish to not have single issues. It's just like, I'm going to bring someone into my store guaranteed every Wednesday, and the more space I devote, the more those people show up, and they're going to do add-ons like graphic novels, or if you've got a nice counter display, they're going to buy terrible little Dorbs figures or whatever else popular this week.
The thing with those periodical buyers, though, too, is that as they grow older, their lives change.
And
sometimes they phase out of the periodicals.
Yeah. Right.
And
or they should.
You have the graphic novels available, they can transition to that. But they're also having families, probably.
Right.
And then they want to introduce their kids to the stuff they love.
Right.
They want books for their kids, and that's like an area we've always been like champions of, and we've been leaders in, and that's something I'm extremely proud of, and that we have so many customers coming in who are families, who are coming in, like, we are a destination store for birthday present gifts at this point. Like, people will come in, to the extent that we've now have to bring in like gift bags and cards, because people are coming in on Saturday buying a present to directly go to a birthday party, and they need stuff to wrap it. They don't want to make another stop. So
diversity in direct market was such a low bar. I just want to say like what Jen was saying, like, kids, diversity in direct market was such a low bar for such a long time.
Yeah.
Like, if you had a comic for women, 51% of the population of the earth, you were a diverse store. And now it's like, you should have comics for everybody, but at least, like, especially children. Like, if you have a store where you have someone who comes in and under the age of 18, you can't sell them anything, it's probably a problem, or you've got a hell of a concept store. But yeah, like, that diversity has to extend to making sure that we cradle to grave readers. Like, we want to have stuff like the real book industry. You can buy a book for someone at any age, or a book, you know, and we didn't have that in comics for a long time. We're getting a lot better about that.
Well, the crazy thing is that the book market has done so well with these publications. And the direct market, for some reason, just doesn't want to also do well with those publications.
Yeah,
like, why would you not stock Smile?
Yes.
It's the craziest thing I've ever heard.
I think it's generational in a sense that, you know, the generation we grew up with that wanted to start doing this type of business only wanted to sell comics.
Only wanted to sell the stuff they already liked.
Right, you know. So they wanted to feed their own ego for that. You know, but make some money at it. You know?
So I think
but there are still some issues in the book trade around.
Of course,
certainly in independent bookstores.
I mean, speaking for myself, I don't want to try and make a better market for the direct market or the book market. I want to actually, and I just came from another panel talking about this, where we were discussing European comics. I want to bring the idea of the format of the business model of Europe to here. Because you have everything for everyone there, and there's nothing attached with trying to build an audience, because your audience is there. You know, everybody's actually interested in reading something, so the actual challenge is creating enough content for people to be interested in. And over there, there's just way too much content, actually. But the reality is that we've decided to marginalize and create a niche buying market here. And so it becomes difficult to actually build a diverse audience. And thankfully, the publishers are out there. Now it's a question of, do the actual stores want to actually help the publishers in that? And does the audience want to be willing to be open to that? Because we're reinforcing everything that's been going on for the last 40 years based on the content of other media to help perpetuate that. You know, if you went out and saw Guardians of the Galaxy, all you're telling yourself is, if you do buy a comic, you should expect only Guardians of the Galaxy. But if you went out and saw Ghost World, and I know I'm dating myself, but still, you know,
it's valid.
It's valid, though, right? Like, you're saying to yourself, you're open to the possibility of reading comics like Ghost World. So, however, are you willing to open yourself to reading all of that? You know, and that's why I'm trying to bring Europe here. You know, that's the real secret to it. You know?
So, I want to get some questions in, but you've got, you know, Terrence's role, and I hate to slow
Sorry,
down.
You brought attention to me, so.
There you go.
Yeah.
But look, let's. Are there questions from the audience? Our time is running down. We have a great panel. Questions about retailing, and certainly about diversity, about how this world of comics, of selling comics, is changing. Come on, we got a microphone right down here. I could talk all night, but now's your chance. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Right ahead. All right.
Oh, Matt Smith.
Yes. I just have a question about diversity in comic books. Diamond, you said, obviously doesn't stock a lot of LGBT and a lot of superheroes of color and that sort of thing to the max, because they're mostly the big two, and then you got Boom and Diamond, that sort of thing. Of the big two, Marvel and DC. Marvel just came under fire recently for the whole. Basically, the argument was they're SJWing themselves to death, was essentially the argument. Would you say that any diversity, be it interpreted pandering or not, be welcome in comic books just because it is diverse? Does that make sense?
I say yes.
Okay.
I got
no. But I mean yes to everything and no to everything. What I mean by that is that I'm going to just flat out say, if Marvel was creating much more interesting content regardless of the diversity, then people would have actually bought it. So it's not a question of, like, if there's no interest in diversity. I don't think that's the case. I think that's an easy way to say you're not doing well in sales. And that's because the content's not really that interesting. That's just my personal opinion. If it was more interesting, and I'm not trying to crap on their work, even though it seems like it, you know. You know, because look, DC's putting out some diverse books too, and their Rebirth is doing great. Why? Because the branding's here, but also the content's doing well.
The big difference for me between the two is that DC has a really solid kids line.
Yes.
And Marvel has nothing. And that's a real problem.
Unless you're Little X-Men versus Little Avengers or whatever they
or
call
it. Or if you want to look at screen caps of cartoons, that's not really satisfying.
Yeah.
So
that's,
for me, I find DC more diverse. And, you know, Marvel had a monster hit with Ms. Marvel. And then they've tried to recapture that by, like, telling creators, give me the next Ms. Marvel. That's not... just not how it works, unfortunately. And there are some really great books, like Squirrel Girl and Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, and these books are amazing. The problem is that retailers aren't getting behind them and ordering them in quantities and hand-selling them to their customers.
Right.
And I think the bottom line is that retailers need to get more internally diverse. They need to be more open to the wider range of things out there in the comic format that they can sell to their customers.
Right.
So I happen to love a lot of Marvel titles. I'm a Marvel girl compared to DC. I read so many Marvel books, but I completely agree with what Jennifer's saying, is the retailers really have to do the work. I perpetually stock that timely issue of Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur that was published it's been a while now. They republished the first three issues of Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur and put it out under the timely title, and it was only $3. Every single time somebody comes in with a child who's just looking around while their father or mother shops, I hand them that book for free. And I am single-handedly selling our Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur trades in our shop because those people come back. Because that book is good.
Yeah.
It's good. Representation is important. And so every time I see a little black girl come in, they get a free copy of that book.
Well, I do think there's good stuff from Marvel. I just feel that there's some stuff that's just not interesting, even though it's been...
Oh, I agree.
Under a lot of diverse stuff, you know.
I agree.
But I'm not backpedaling.
So we don't have a lot of time, so we're going to get questions in.
Sure, great.
A lot of retailers, I pointed earlier, sort of got into business to sell the stuff that they like. I also find a lot of retailers I sort of have interacted with, briefly anyway, seem to be interested in building a retail establishment that is largely, the goal is to hang out with your friends and talk comics rather than to actually do business.
Pinball machines.
Sort of a, maybe an issue around
it's
fandom.
Right. It's a trap.
Right?
You should never walk into a comic shop that's selling pizza, too.
What are the pieces of sort of fandom and geek culture that might be getting in the way of people sort of actually taking a step forward and expanding beyond sort of limited expectations?
And, you know, I think that's probably going to be the last question that we can take, so I'm sorry. I've got the high side, so.
Yeah. Real quick, you can have a lot of different kinds of stores that are successful. And no, Gem Store is different than Heidi Ho, or sorry, Dragon Star is different than Heidi Ho, is different than Galleon, is different than Kinokuniya, or even Midtown, for that matter.
Mm.
And I think that you can actually put together a store that is fandom-oriented, that is a good place to hang out, but also buy stuff. And you can do that. You can do it in a smart way. You can also do that in a terrible way, because anytime you create a community, anytime you create something that's inclusive, it sort of necessarily excludes the people outside of it.
There's outsiders.
So as soon as you create an insider-outsider situation, you have that issue. By making everyone an outsider, that's how the ground dealt with that. And it worked the way it worked, where some people hated shopping at the store that we ran, even though we had everything, and some people loved it. But either way, everyone comes in on the same level. I think that creating a really nice, inclusive community has a lot of benefits, has a lot of drawbacks as well. But part of that is just, like, you get to choose how you want to interact with fandom. I think everyone feels pressured in a different way to be, like, the everything store these days. And, like, be good at comics, if that's your thing. Be good at graphic novels, if that's your thing. Don't be good at you and your buddies hanging out playing Magic, because that is not a good business.
That's a basement. That's a word. That's a basement.
Like, I've got a basement.
Right. Let's make money in this basement.
So you guys, and I think Jen and Kristen, you guys run more community-oriented stores probably than anything that I have to do. Do you have thoughts on that one?
Your community is what you make of it. So we are a gaming store as well as a comic store. Where it's kind of like 40. About 45% comics, 45% games, and then 10% merchandise and other assorted things. So we run gaming events 5 days a week. We have very high expectations of our gamers. We have rules that are set out. They're very straightforward. You know, your language must be inclusive. You know, make sure that you smell good enough.
Whoa, to have that. Whoa, that's a rule?
That's great.
Rule.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a good standard of gamesmanship. You know, make sure that you're, you know, we say keep your victory dances to a minimum. You know, just make sure that, you know, you're having a good time and you're supporting other players. So we've gotten to a point now, because we've been so vigilant about things like inclusive language and, you know, making sure that new players are welcome and that people can come in at different levels, that even though we have actually very high competitive players, we are not seen as a competitive store. We're seen as a casual store. And our last pre-release, we had one pre-release where there were like two tables side by side. It was a two-headed giant, and we had two teams of women, and then we had two teams that were parent and child teams. And we have a ton of kids who come out, and we have a ton of women who come out to our events because they see themselves in the staff. They see themselves in the players. You know, they walk by and they see themselves represented in who's playing. And, you know, a lot of that is top-down. It comes from the staff. It comes from you know, me making sure that there's pretty much always a woman working, and that she's knowledgeable and she has expertise, and so people can say, oh yeah, well, I thought that this person knew nothing about Magic, but actually, like, she's been playing Magic since Revised.
So, I think that on that note, I actually have to wrap this up, and that's a perfect way to end this. Look, thanks so much to our panel. Give them a big hand if you would.